Welcome to The Ether. Today is Wednesday, March 2nd, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the lunatic community. Visit OC's What We Do page using the link in the show notes to take advantage of some of their other educational resources, including weekly meetups to discuss Terra protocols, strategies, and concepts, the Terra Luna Intel Report on Telegram, and YouTube explainer videos on Terra concepts. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by Luart. Luart is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. Luart provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, a CeFi space. Luna, what is going on with this thing? Am I right? Let's take a listen.
Hey, Brittle, what's up?
Chillin', bro. How are you?
Good, good. Just open up a chat here.
Yeah, so what's going on with this thing?
Well, I was just sort of like scoping out all the other spaces this evening. One space today is on the SEC and its statements. Another one's got Andrew Yang in it talking with Axie Infinity. And I was like, I don't know. I thought I'd do another Luna discussion just because why not?
I love these discussions, to be honest, Brad. I find the more people that we end up putting on this thing, the higher this rocket ship keeps going. So I'm more than happy to see these running every single day.
I tried to explain to the lawyer crowd that by the time we're done building, it'll be pretty much impossible to regulate the space.
They didn't like that.
No, they didn't like that because it doesn't it doesn't fit with the "I'm a lawyer and need to protect the status quo."
Funny enough, sort of argument. I would love for you to meet one of my closest friends and the first guy I ended up rooming with when I first started uni. He is now a lawyer for one of the largest firms here in Canada, and I put him on Luna. He's never looked back. In fact, he's now considering alternatives to his career. We're talking about a man who earns 100K plus, like just entry salaries, is considering, oh, let me just get out of this. So it's possible.
Yeah, well, what I was trying to get across, then this is the problem. Like, if I get into other spaces, like you can't really flesh out an argument very well because everyone's kind of busy. So, what I was trying to say to the sort of lawyer batch was that when you finish building Web3, you essentially eliminate what would be today's stock markets entirely. I just don't think people understand that the nature of this. So when you have the existence of deterministic tokenomics, it essentially makes traditional capital raises and traditional ways of sort of selling equities basically irrelevant.
Yeah, so, the entire finance market doesn't need to exist. You had a post recently about this, no? If you have, what was it, UST, Luna, or CRT, Rune, You're bankless. You're almost there. Yeah.
Well, you only need certain features to make a massive difference, right? You just need to be able to move about the ecosystem in a private, censorship-resistant way that includes the centralized exchanges and such. And as things go forward, you know, businesses will run on various sort of not play. So the other spaces going on right now is Andrew Yang, and they're discussing with Yield Guild and some people I know about the issue of like universal basic income and this and that, and how like Axie Infinity and Play to Earn works. But if you think about it, like eventually Play to Earn is essentially work to earn.
Just earn.
And what that ends up developing into is ultimately work to earn crypto, which means you're not actually getting, you're not earning anymore in it at having to go to a traditional bank. So the entire system sort of flips in to the extent that like you, it won't make sense to own assets that don't give you the yield from that network that you are buying. So think about all like human companies as a sort of like network, and you need to have some ownership of it. You know, traditionally that was done with dividends and this and that, but at the end of the day, the like SEC and whatnot, they're not going to be able to regulate anything. Like their entire existence is going to be like pointless at some level. And I think that's the urgency. The speed of building needs to exceed the speed of like individual countries from kind of stifling that innovation ultimately.
Because
yeah, I mean it's such a strange problem, but like without the proper sort of like vision or framework, what ends up happening is the lawyer crowd wants to do their thing, the SEC people want to do their thing, the regulatory people want to do whatever, and the reality is that you can just outbuild all of that. You know, it's like how BitTorrent hasn't been stopped yet. Like people still pirate movies on the thing, right? Like, and so I think that it's laughable, the idea that somehow like all of this is going to be like cleanly regulated or whatnot. So some of the discussions in that one forum were basically revolving around like, how do we like build a NFT project, or how do we build whatever project and not be considered a security and then be in violation? The reality is at this point, number one, SEC has clearly shown that you don't want to be cooperating them with any way, in any way, shape, or form. Otherwise, all you do is get in trouble. And B, like, it makes no sense to start a project in anything but a decentralized community manner. You, the starter of the company or the project or whatever, you will have the alpha, right? You'll know upfront that your project is worth something, so you can just simply buy your own token on the open market. So for example, let's say you create a new dApp or a new NFT platform and it has a coin of some kind, right? You could just float the thing, have the thing essentially worthless, right? Like you just distribute it for zero. You know, whoever wants to get the coin can get the coin. And then you just buy however much of it you think you need on the open market. And now it can't be considered a security, and game over. Like you just basically just eliminated
GG.
you eliminated the entire need for like a regulatory agency and whatnot. And you having the alpha, knowing that your project's gonna be amazing, and you just simply like pay for the coins at like for nothing, right? It'd be like Do Kwon buying like Luna at, like for pennies, right? So you know,
at that point, security at that point.
Yeah, I mean, who's gonna stop him, right? So this is the kind of the idea that ultimately Web3 brings, and it seems like all the lawyers and regulators just really don't get it. None of us are going to go to them for protection. Get out of here.
It's just idiotic, but I find that's
it's idiotic to even consider
that. Problems are though, no, like that's where most of the issue is stemming with kind of getting mainstream adoption or getting the average, like Joe's just literally bought his first Bitcoin because his like grandson told him to at Christmas dinner. The difficulty is getting them to adopt something so new with these traditional institutions that exist and are already in place. Like Jerome Powell's words, for some reason, speak so much to the average like American, for example. It means a lot. So how do we get past that and get to the next stage of adoption for things like the Terra ecosystem, for example?
I think it's going to be like the same way smartphones played out. I mean, the reality is that initially a few hardcore people bought, you know, iPhones or whatever, most people didn't realize how impactful that would be. Most people didn't realize how impactful the App Store would be or any of that, right? Like, so in other words, how many of you, like, imagine we'd be sitting in Twitter spaces now, like in, you know, 2022 or whatever it is now, and we are like discussing, you know, bullshit on our cell phones with people we barely know, you know, in a group that we just sort of like emerged out of thin air like 5 minutes ago. So, you know, the, you know, none of this can, was really fully imagined, you know, back when the sort of like initial fire was being lit. And that's what's happening in Web3 right now. I think that how companies are run, how countries are run, it all sort of turns, you know, into a slightly different mechanism. And what people's expectations are going to be. Like right now, and this is why we're kind of joking around the other day about like a bunch of shit coins, you know, with stupid tokenomics. Like at this point, the reality is that if your coin, Luna in this case, is what we kind of care about. But if your coin does not have sort of investor-friendly tokenomics, right, you can sort of like play some kind of pyramid scheme or some other scam for a period of time, but they're not going to last indefinitely. That's just kind of what it is. Like, look at, I don't know, you guys can pick your shit coin.
Pick a Ponzi.
Yeah, we can just sort of like pick a Ponzi and like just talk about like, you know, why it won't work. Even some of the ones that are with fairly good market caps, like a, I don't know, an XRP, it was a perfect example. It doesn't have any deterministic tokenomics. It doesn't have any return of value to the holder of the coin in the form of yield of transactions on the network. And what you're ostensibly doing is you are actually subsidizing banks so that, like, between Ripple and some banks, they can have a system that potentially works. How does that, what does that have to do with you and me gaining any value from this outside the fact that we're literally subsidizing this, right? And maybe the price of it goes up and maybe you can sell the actual coin at a higher price in theory, right? So I think what has happened over the last several years, and especially the last two, I would say, is that the tokenomics designs are like a, think about survival of the fittest. Imagine DNA, and there's a bunch of different, like, you know, animals in an ecosystem. And eventually survival of the fittest makes the, like, DNA of the really good ones emerge. And then, you know, you have, like, dinosaurs, and then you have humans, and, you know, all of the other things in between, right? So the that evolutionary process is what we're seeing now with a kind of destruction of the shitty stuff. And people's realization that, wait a minute, like, how does this thing benefit me? Like, if I own this coin, if I own this crypto, if I own this token, whatever it is. And what you're finding is that those projects that can't develop investor-grade tokenomics are starting to, are getting killed. People notice this on Terra, for example, when, like, oh, wait, like, there's this curse of all the Terra altcoins. Everything goes down after it comes out. And legitimately, some of them did not have well-designed initial tokenomics. And then, of course, like lock drops and all these different interesting concepts came out to try to protect people from overpaying for things and having things pump and then dump. So some of it's human psychology, you know, and all of that. But at some level, in crypto today, what has happened is you're seeing like a decimation of the useless stuff that was just never going to have the same network effects. And it's almost like an evolution of the apex network effect systems that is playing out. So in Solana's case, it was like a mixture of speed and NFTs that kind of like, you know, brought it into the, you know, forefront. In the case of, I don't know, the Cardano, it was like, you know, gajillion YouTubers talking about how we're going to save Africa with it or some shit. I'm still waiting for that to happen. You know, so there's certain like network effects that played out with each of them that build sort of that hype. And then, you know, once you get into the weeds and have to have build a product that actually works, then the question is, you know, is a Cardano going to make it? I don't know. Is an XRP going to make it? I don't know. But the simpler question you just, that people have to just ask themselves is, wait, why would I own this coin? Okay, I'm subsidizing the network. I'm supposedly securing it. I'm getting some yield off it, apparently. So everybody's subsidizing that yield and the exit liquidity available for it. But at the end of the day, why would any of these things exist if the next apex predator comes along with a better tokenomic, with a better system that's faster, maybe more scalable, with maybe more whatever? So it's really easy to kind of like each new project to jump to the next and get better and better, because you can basically learn from all of the mistakes of the past 3 years. In 3 years from now, people will learn from the mistakes of these 3 years, and you know, on and on and on. So you're seeing this play out in some of the new like tokenomics and projects that are coming out, like on Terra, and how they're trying to release their coins and, you know, trying to make it more investor friendly and such. But you're definitely seeing a lot of this play out in this. So if you take the top 100, you'll notice there's like a half dozen various projects that are sort of falling relative to the rest of the market. But man, do they take a long time to go to zero, don't they? Like, what is EOS still doing? I think they're doing I think there's a little bit of something or another on that network, but you know, nothing worth talking about. What's that you're saying?
I didn't know they were still a thing, man.
Yeah, they're still in the I think they're still in the top 100. If you just get on CoinMarketCap and scroll down and get a chuckle of where they are now. I think that's like, anyway, point is like there's so what is it that I think right now Terra brings that other systems do not is right now the best way to define this is the owner of Luna essentially gets an asset whose value is deterministic, cannot be priced in purely by market sentiment. And the reason for that is the actual activity on the network and the actual use of UST directly affects Luna supply. Okay. So unlike, say, for example, an XRP, where the use of one XRP doesn't delete that XRP for good, right? Because it's a utility token, technically. But it's not like the utility is a single use and therefore now it's gone. It just basically just keeps on being there. So you're basically just subsidizing banks. In the case of Luna's situation, the burn mechanism and the deflationary mechanism, any adoption of UST gets you direct like value accrual to Luna and vice versa. So if I wanted to make UST at some point in the future, I could speculate on Luna now, hold it for a period of years, and then convert it to UST a later time. And I can do that, by the way, with no outside exchange. I think we forget about that part of it. The fact that you can go back and forth from Luna and UST with no actual exchange, not TerraSwap, not Astroport, nothing, right? That's an interesting element where an exchange is actually built into the tokenomic between a stable and an unstable, to the point where you really almost don't need anything else, which is an odd sort of like an odd situation to be in. But the Luna's price being so deterministic, on top of that you get yield, and on top of that you get the ability to borrow off your Luna in the form of collateral. So why in the hell would I want an EOS token? Like, what am I going to do with that? Besides the fact there's nothing happening on it, nothing. Why would I want Litecoin? What am I going to do with BSV? It's going to become the world's money. Who gives a shit? Like, the world already has money. So you need to solve an additional problem. And one of those problems has been the ability globally to access an asset with essentially a deterministic nature, whereby like even 5 years from now, there is a reason to own a Luna if you're a newcomer, right? Like, you can't just be like the OG people get rich and everybody else is an idiot. It's just a pure greater fool theory. No, because like anytime someone uses Luna for its for the actual purpose it's designed for, it has a value accrual mechanism that benefits the holder, right? Like, there's very few stocks that do this, by the way, or actually none, realistically speaking. So I don't know, just some kind of like theory ideas here.
I think that's like single-handedly why this, I guess, to the moon theory for Luna holds so well. It's that network effect that you were just saying, right? The benefit for each OG, quote unquote, who got into the space early to, I guess, give out the disinformation of all the different ways that you could go bankless realistically just on Terra is huge. Everybody benefits from it. Each new user getting on is a net benefit for all the old users as well as the new users moving forward. So I think that's probably its strongest suit going forward. Selvie, I was going to hop off here pretty soon, but I never got a chance to ask you, what is your Anchor aside, the project on Terra you're most excited about?
Let's see. I think the ones that, well, of the new things that are coming, I think Vertex could be supremely important to Terra becoming a truly global stablecoin exchange with essentially some sort of money market that makes sure that you have peg maintenance for all of the stablecoins and sufficient liquidity for a global network of international stablecoins. I think that piece of the puzzle, has not been fit in yet. And I don't know that Vertex can accomplish that. You would have to basically bring in lots of people into Terra who otherwise would be like Forex traders. We're not really talking about an application that is just like the average DGEN project, right? Like where you just go and monkey around and make some yield in an LP. I don't think that's what exactly it's for. So we'll have to see how that plays out. The second project that I think is, is the world changing kind of a thing is Andromeda. I don't know when their release schedule is and how that's going to look, but it's essentially a sort of like ultra project of composability regarding, I think, smart contracts and NFTs. So again, I don't know all of the mechanics of it. They haven't released too much, but it's supposed to be one of the more sort of like crypto space gigabrain operations. So we'll see what happens there. So of the new ones that are coming, I think those are super interesting. As far as what's out there now, I think the ones I am using most frequently, maybe put it that way, I think complementary to Anchor, if people want more Luna, definitely Kujira plays a function in our network. It's very specific though. It's not like, you can use Kujira for a lot of things. You just use it for a thing right now. So that's a purpose-built utility. And then we've got, what else is interesting? Prism Protocol is pretty fascinating. It allows you to do different things with your yield opportunities if you, choose to do so. And I think that will become much more interesting, not with just Luna on it, but with lots of other yield-bearing cryptos that you can kind of deploy and refract and play games with on there. So that might get interesting. As far as like, is Prism going to change the world? I don't know, but it definitely is relatively unique in DeFi. What else is coming? Kinetic looks super interesting.
What about Mars?
Yeah, sure. Well, Mars has a very special role. It's a different type of borrowing and leverage that is like very specific to like defined risk strategies. So the field of Mars will have a variety of things you could theoretically invest into that involves leverage into various protocols. So yeah, I'm not sure I can fully describe it to you until it comes out and you actually sit there on Fields of Mars and like look and see what kind of investment opportunities are there. But those are going to be very different opportunities than what you get like with Anchor Protocol or with like a Kinetic Money. Kinetic, I think, is super powerful going forward. So imagine, okay, so, you know, Luna's at $1,000 and you're all Luna rich and you're like, huh, what am I going to do with this like now? Am I going to sell my Luna? Am I going to use it for something? What's interesting about Kinetic is whatever yield comes off of your Luna, you could theoretically just borrow off that ahead of time. So let's say, for example, your yield at that, you know, that point is like 3% or something, let's make some number up, or 1%. Then you could take that yield and you could borrow off of that ahead of time. And then you could do whatever you want with it. It'll be a self-repaying loan. So, you know, you'll retain your price exposure to Luna. You'll be able to continue to hold it, but then you'll be able to do a self-repaying loan with essentially nothing you have to monitor and go spend that money on whatever the hell you want. And that's really interesting just because the more of these things that we have that like lock up Luna over a defined period of time for a specific utility, those things will cause, well, obviously more supply shock essentially for Luna over the long term. And unlike other systems like, I don't know, like a Hex, for example, which is kind of like a big like bond Ponzi scheme. Well, it's actually like a pyramid scheme, actually. The problem with that is that that has no actual utility. With Kinetic, it's actually just simply taking a revenue stream that you already have, like in the form of Luna's yield, and it's allowing you to take the yield immediately, as opposed to having to wait for, say, a year. The only thing you have to do is lock up your Luna, pay back your loan during that time, and that's what you're giving up, right? So you're giving up your access to your Luna in order to take the yield now. So those kinds of systems are super powerful. They tend to be value accrual mechanisms for Luna itself because it kind of reduces the supply of it, but also it creates a demand for it too, right? Because if I know now that I can basically later use Kinetic money to do whatever I want with my yield, then why wouldn't I want more Luna now, right? Like so those utilities that Luna has is another extremely compelling set of circumstances outside of the demand for UST, right? Because all of us here have a demand for Luna itself. If you look at my own portfolio, I have almost none in UST right now, and almost all in some Luna or primitive, or I'm borrowing off of it, or I'm borrowing off it and buying more Luna, whatever it is I'm doing. But the point is, like, I don't necessarily need a whole lot of UST. I prefer, for the time being, access to the price volatility of Luna and the growth accrual of it, right? So the dual utility of both sides, both tokens, the stable coins and the Luna coin itself, is just extremely impressive as far as dual network effects. Because on the one hand, you have the network effect of the use of UST on all over the world doing who knows what. And then you have the network effect of Luna and its price action, both of which cause like discussion, right? Like nobody's talking about, nobody has like, you know, group sessions and confabs about, you know, Tether, right? Except FUD. Like there's no one, there's no memification of Tether. There's no, you know, no one like, you know, loves their USDC, right? Nobody cares. So it's an interesting pair of layers. And I was bringing this up earlier today with some folks in a that were talking about NFTs. And one of the points I was trying to make with them, because some of them were like, hey, we all got into NFTs. We have no idea what crypto is all about. We don't know what DeFi is all about. We learned all of this. You know, what we needed to do to buy our NFTs, but we don't really know about DeFi and what's going on. And what I was trying to explain to them was that it actually does matter if you're an NFT developer or if you're going to buy an NFT. It does matter that the underlying layer one is long-term going to be amazing. Like, I know it's, you know, we're all going to make it and all this other BS, but the point is, like, it's not, we're not all going to make it. That's just not true. In tech, this was not the case, right? So in tech, there was a, you know, how many different cell phone manufacturers and how many different whatever software manufacturers just disappeared, right? A lot of them did. Now, you know, some people gambled and they said, hey, you know, we're going to develop on you know, Apple, right? And Apple computers did really shitty for a long period of time. Those developers kind of suffered pretty badly. They didn't get access to the market that Microsoft got on Windows, right? So it does matter where you build, and it does matter where your NFTs are, because you want those things to have value in the long run. And by having a layer one coin that has just like really like premium, by having a layer one coin that has a premium value accrual mechanism that's like undisputed, you create the basis for like a treasury asset and the public coming in and feeling good about what they own, right? There's no obvious reason for me to be upset about owning Luna. I don't have to worry about it in some form or fashion. And all of that, I think, is really, really, all of that's really powerful to future builders on the network. So I understand now, like a year ago or more, when a lot of people said, hey, we're going to go build on Terra, right? Like the Andromeda people and whoever, and they planned out a multi-year build strategy like Astroport and such. Why Delphi Digital and Messari and whatnot are like focused on Terra? You know, maybe I didn't get it a year and a half ago, but I understand now why they got it then, is what I'm trying to say. And I think there is a hugely disproportionate portion of the NFT community that just doesn't really understand the fundamental mechanics of the sort of ecosystems they're getting themselves into. And no, it's not the same building everywhere. It just isn't. Like, there is no comparison to what could be built on Terra from the perspective of NFTs and the various like Web3 myriad spider webs of things you can create compared to what you could create, like, say, for example, on a Cardano or whatever that doesn't have a native stablecoin system, does not have all the benefits of the Cosmos network and all of those network effects and connections to liquidity such as BTC via Thor network and all these other things that are coming to Terra. So it's just not going to be the same thing. And unfortunately, significant portions of those chains, yes, they'll form a community, and I understand like how everyone's like, oh yeah, we're all going to make it and we all have to have a community, and NFTs have to have a community, and people value their NFTs because of their community. I get all that, you know, whatever. It's nothing new that hasn't been done in video games 20, 30 years ago. It's literally nothing new. But I will warn people that like most of those communities are gone now. And the reason they're gone is because those games stop being interesting, or those platforms stop being interesting. You have to have a system. And I think Terra has a lot of features that allow that to happen. Probably not perfect, but certainly a lot closer to that than most platforms. But anyway, Cryptographer, any comments, thoughts, or Caleb?
I'm just kind of hanging out, but just on the NFT thing, like, yeah, I mean, I see the same thing. Like, sometimes I join these NFT spaces on Twitter, and they're all over the place. Like, you know, for some people, the NFTs are like, it's crazy. You go in and it's like, they're all talking about like going to these clubs in LA and like how you need a Bored Ape or whatever to do that. And that's like all it is for them, you know, a lot of these people, and they just have no idea about anything beyond that. But like that guy, Jeff, that was in, the space earlier today seemed pretty cool, and like empowering people through NFTs and all that stuff. And I joined another space with him today, and yeah, I mean, they seem pretty open-minded, which is cool. You know, I think that a lot of people in the NFT space would definitely benefit from becoming more educated on the whole DeFi thing, but it's like kind of hard to bridge that gap of knowledge, because a lot of those people are kind of just getting into it for the either the like notoriety of having one of these sought after expensive NFTs, or just like as a way to like sell their art. Like, they're actually artists, but they're not knowledgeable about you know, the more technical aspects of of DeFi and whatnot. So,
I would say that like money and liquidity does solve a lot of problems. So, even if, say, for example, Solana was imperfect in some way, a huge amount of notoriety and cash flow into that ecosystem, a lot of technical problems can be either fixed or, say, copied from other chains. It's not like these ideas, like there's no monopoly of ideas here. Like they're all in the open space. So it's not like patents or whatever where someone can't just copy ideas. So I think in the Web 3.0 space, you're going to have really, really, really rapid iteration because there isn't really any serious copyright or patent style process that prevents that from happening. So I think they can fix their spaces. I just think it's not a great idea for people who are building, especially some of these NFT platforms that we were talking about today, where they just have like no idea how crypto works, and it's just like they're in it for the art or the community or whatever. I suppose that's fine. Not all artists want to be like freaking, you know, tech engineers or whatever. That's perfectly fine. But at the same time, you shouldn't be under the illusion that somehow none of that matters, right? Like there are reasons why, like, for example, some countries are much more successful than others at whatever they do.
Also, it's just, I think it's also useful to know if there's other things that have possibly a better long-term value. Like, who knows if Terra's long-term going to outperform Ethereum, but just the fact that OpenSea is mostly based on Ethereum, so all these artists are getting paid in Ethereum. That's where the volume is right now, so they use that and they pay the fees. And probably a lot of them, I don't know about a lot of them, but I'm sure some of them at the very least just hold on to their Ethereum. But what if long-term Ethereum just kind of goes sideways, or a lot of people think that Ethereum is a blue chip and it's going to just continue to perform. But what if it doesn't? What if it gets outperformed by something like Terra, and then more of the NFT volume eventually is on Terra? So in that sense,
conceptually, like one of the problems is there's the memification of price, which we talk about a lot. And, Bitcoin was specifically designed to go up in value and to have persistent volatility. That's kind of what it's, sort of like what its tokenomic was built for, with the realization that basically with volatility comes more liquidity, and it brings in more speculators. And so it's designed to sort of go up and down a lot. That's the idea. I do think Terra has that feature. Luna has that feature. And the more scarce it becomes, actually, the more volatile it becomes. The reason I bring this up is because if you kind of think about it, you really have to have an asset that literally keeps going up and up and up over time. If you don't, then people start losing interest. In fact, you see this happen just inside of Terra. You don't have to go very far. Like any coin that like is going down, 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 people are, just completely uninterested until it starts going up, up, and up, right? Like it's a funny kind of phenomenon where many people won't necessarily go to the underlying coin just because there might be future value in it. Like the price action itself is like just an advertisement, essentially. So what I do like about how Luna is designed as well is that the perpetual tendency for price to go up over most of its time period, right? Like it spends time obviously going down in a volatile fashion, but at the same time, the significant portion of the time it's been running, Luna's been in kind of an upswing. Now, is that going to persist in that way? Maybe not. And if that's not the case, then people jump to something else and get excited about something else, right? This is the problem. So you really have to have these really, really aggressive value accrual mechanisms. And I like the way that like Luna's market cap falls as the price goes up, because that just actually leaves open for a lot more upward price discovery sort of while the supply falls. And that preserves the price is a meme theory of like attracting people perpetually, right? So like, and then once you have that, you have the basis for like, you don't have to advertise because, right? Because everybody's, the more happy the lunatics are or whoever the, you know, whichever coin you're on, the more likely you're going to shill your bags. And that's just kind of how this works. And people are going to talk about it. And then of course, other people on the network, like the NFT producers, whatever, all indirectly sort of like flock to the network with the most attention. So it's interesting how like the price action itself is like its own free advertising. And I think that's a strong point in this network particularly. But Frugal, had your hand up. Any comments, thoughts?
Yeah, I'm sorry for the background noise, but did you see the tweet that Doe put out today tagging Michael Saylor himself and like saying that I would like Terra would have a bigger stack than yours? Like that kind of puts into perspective how much they're planning to buy, or at least like in the short term, like, you know, like the numbers, like MicroStrategy themselves have around, I think, 120,000 Bitcoins. And if like Terra bought Bitcoin at one, like around 34,000, that gives like around 30,000 Bitcoins to Terra. So that's at least 100,000 more that like Terra might be buying in the future.
So, you've got like a lot of racket going on over there. Yeah, hit that beat for a second. he's like at the Daytona or something. Anyway, the thing to Michael Saylor really is just to kind of, you know, get attention, right? It's just kind of not trolling, but like, you know, little competitive, you know, tweeting or what have you. I think that's fine. It's just in good fun for the most part. I think he's just trying to get Michael Saylor to think about what Terra is, get people who are like Bitcoin hardcore people to understand it. And, you know, kind of almost, it's like shaking their hand. Hey, we're into Bitcoin too, right? So you can trust us. So it's a little bit different. It's like a we're all going to make it kind of tweet, sort of. Because, like, obviously, if Terra bought Bitcoin and Michael Saylor bought it cheaper, like, we just made the value of his Bitcoin go up, right? So it brings them into the conversation a little bit and, you know, might get into a situation where Doe and Michael Saylor can have a chat about it or something like that. So as far as, like, how much we're going to get and whether we're going to somehow compete with the MicroStrategy or whatever, I don't know. Now, Terra probably could fundraise another billion. I mean, holy shit, like the people that bought Luna at $51, like doubled their money in like 2 weeks. I think the venture capital that bought that $1 billion worth of Luna are pretty happy right now. In fact, they did much better trading their Bitcoin for Luna than they did than they did with their BTC itself. So quite the investment for them, obviously. Anyway, Caleb, what's up?
Hey, Sifat. I was just curious as to your opinions about one of your recent retweets about the ST Luna pair. It seems really attractive, about, I think, 70% APR. So I was thinking of just converting all my Luna into that liquidity pool, as I don't see any downside in it. What do you think? Is there anything I'm not considering?
No, seems perfectly fine. Yes, okay. Somebody else posted that idea.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of feedback, by the way. You got to turn your volume down a little bit. you have a lot of echo there, that's all. Yeah, you're okay.
Okay. So another question I have is, what do you think about a pair such as Anchor Luna pair? Why does such pairs not exist? Or Mirror Luna, things like that?
So the way that DEXs work, you basically want to have the main trading pairs be things that like almost everybody uses. Like, for example, a UST Luna or a Luna bonded Luna, right? You for a LP pair to really make a lot of sense, you basically want to have the pair be the most common like pairing most people are going to use. After that, what happens is routing takes care of the rest. So, for example, if you have an ANC UST pair and you have a UST Luna pair, you can convert from Anchor to Luna, and the routing in the background will convert between one and the other. People don't build liquidity pairs just because you and I want to invest in a little bit of ANK, a little bit of Luna, and throw them in a pool together. The LPs, to be profitable, right, have to have a lot of transactions between those two coins. Otherwise, your yield is going to be really low, right? The other thing is, when you're in an LP, the other downside is you lose the yield of your ANK token because you're not in governance, and you lose the yield of your you lose the yield of your let's say Luna. So the ANK Luna pair, you'd lose both of those, and you'd have to have enough transactional activity to overcome whatever yield you would have had had you just been in those two coins staked in the first place. So the opportunity cost, I think, prohibits a lot of LP pairs. Where you could solve this problem is, like, let's say you just wanted to, like, be exposed to two coins. Ultimately, that's where rebalancer bots come in, and that's a different discussion entirely. And I think more of those kinds of things will come, and they're not that difficult to build comparatively. And then you'll be able to get those kinds of price exposure, where, like, the machine is sort of just trading for you back and forth between two coins that you love. Or more than two, like you can have like several. Anyway, so that's, so if you wanted to do the ANK Luna pair and you wanted to just sort of like have it trade against each other and, you know, auto compound, where you would do that now is KuCoin, because KuCoin has both ANC and Luna for you to do that with. So that's what you would do.
Okay, got it. Also, one more question. In a previous space, you mentioned something about borrowing on the way down. I don't know whether you could elaborate more on that, and because I have a kind of interesting situation at the moment. The amount of money I have on my Anchor Earn is about half of my borrowed volume value, but my collateral is quite high. So I'm trying to like get my Anchor Earn to a place where I'm comfortable. It's almost on the same level as what I have borrowed. So I'm trying to look for a good strategy to get my Anchor Earn up.
There's no perfect strategy, but the simple answer is you're trying to get more of an asset when it's down, and you would execute leverage, i.e. borrowing on Anchor, to get, say, for example, more Luna, more the lower the price actually went, right? That's essentially how people use leverage positions. If the price drops lower and lower, they might do leverage longs more aggressively, or, you know, on a traditional exchange, if the price goes higher and higher, some people might like short a position more aggressively. So there's no perfect strategy. What I do is I tend to use leverage via Anchor at the quote unquote bottom. Now, I don't know where the bottom is. So what I do is I take increasing amounts of risk on the way down. So for example, if things are going sideways, maybe I'll just use the Luna that I have, get the yield off of it, and get myself more Luna. Or maybe just do the Luna bonded Luna arbitrage. I don't see any real reason to, like, for example, I had some Luna emerge today. I converted it to bonded Luna, and I just simply burned it again because I didn't feel like borrowing off it at current Luna price. So, you know, I already have plenty that I've leveraged. But as if price drops further, well, maybe I will borrow more off of my Luna, and I'll just go and like get more Luna with it or whatever. So, but you know, what constitutes a drop and where is a bottom? Who the heck knows? You just have to like have a plan for each level down. And a lot of times what'll happen is it means that you just simply won't use all of your capital. You just won't get there. And I think especially when you're borrowing off of things, you have to have a plan because you don't want to obviously get liquidated. So therefore, a cautious plan to do it little by little on the way down makes perfect sense. It's almost like a dollar cost average, but with your borrowing capacity. So that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah, I never exceed the 75% LTV. Never.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. So it's, and sometimes I'll throw it even lower than that. Like if I'm going to get on an airplane or something, I'm like, I don't know where this market's going to go, right? You never know. Sure. So, and I don't really want to watch it, right? So if I'm going to go on a long plane trip, I might as well, I'll figure out how to pay down some of it if I have to. But that's why I always have like B Luna in excess that's sitting in Nexus or my wallet or something. Just, you know, basically I'm not borrowing off of all of it. I'm just earning the yield off of it. And then I can move it into a place where I can cover my LTV if I need to. So that's the trick, is not to ever borrow off of all of it. Because I don't want to have to sell it while it's low, my Luna or my bonded Luna low, to cover my loan, right? That's pointless. So I'd rather just have some B Luna earning yield while I'm waiting.
Got it. Makes sense. Thanks.
Yeah. So I use my B Luna as a, like my extra B Luna as my like safety net. And if I feel like I don't need that safety net anymore, say for example, like I borrowed down at the 40s range and I got a fair amount of Luna, right? But then as the price went up, like my collateral, my LTV is dropping, right? Like the amount of loan is small compared to my total collateral. So on the way up, once we passed about 60-ish or 70 bucks, I started just basically taking my collateral out. All the way up, I actually started taking my collateral out, moving it into my wallet as bonded Luna, and let it sit there, right? Because to manage a 75% LTV. But then once the price went high enough, like above 70 bucks, I started taking small chunks of it and started burning it, because I don't need that collateral anymore, right? But then I can do the ARB again. So today, after 24 days, my Luna emerged from Anchor because I burned it. And then I got 2% more free today on Astroport by converting from Luna to bonded Luna and then burned it again, right? So I'm always looking for little things like that to like constantly like optimize the amount of Luna I acquire, but also managing LTV all the way through it. So I don't have, like, I don't even start. In other words, you need to have that B Luna ready. If it's in the middle of a burn, well, it can't be used for collateral, right? So I need to really make sure price has really gone way past the previous bottom, so that I'm pretty sure that, like, it's not going to crash down to there again within, let's say, the next, you know, 3 weeks. And then I can safely burn it over that time period. Yeah. So like, I don't want it, because it's locked up once you're burning it, right? So yeah. It's not accessible for use as a LTV manager, so to speak. It'd be interesting, actually, if someone created a system where you could basically give up some of your arbitrage and like get this done within like a 3-day burn instead of a 21-day burn. Like, I'm sure there's like a room for some sort of little mini protocol that makes this a little easier. But if you make it too easy, the arbitrage will disappear because everyone will do it. So whatever, I'm fine with it the way it is. But one rock, you there? Or one rook? Rock.
One, sure which one. Yeah, one rock. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, good. You're good, man.
Okay, cool. Yeah, thanks for hosting these. I've kind of been lurking for a while. I just have some comments, some things to add. Hopefully they're helpful. So I don't know, like a number of speakers ago, somebody was talking about securities and, you know, like, you were kind of saying, you know, why is everything gonna eventually just gonna, you know, run on blockchain and crypto? And I totally agree with that. I mean, I think one thing that kind of opened my eyes.
Even if it, okay, by the way, even if it doesn't run on Web3, future stocks are going to have to consider who they're competing with in terms of the design of those stocks, the type of dividends that are released from them, et cetera, right? Because once Web3 sets a new standard for, like, especially community-based projects, it's going to change a lot about how TradFi has to behave, is what I'm saying. So not everything has to go to necessarily, like, truly on blockchain. Even the levers and mechanisms of traditional finance will have to start copying what's happening in Web3.
Yeah, makes sense. So it reminded me of when I was first kind of getting into this stuff, this thing I saw on by Andreas Antonopoulos on YouTube about, he called it, this was like I want to say it was like in 2015 or 16 when pretty much it was just like, called it the upcoming infrastructure inversion. A couple of examples he gave were like the switch over from horse and carriages to automobiles, and how, you know, eventually we went from dirt roads to paved roads, and then, you know, horse and carriage actually went on top of the paved roads. Another thing was similar, or the other, another example, you know, transition from analog phones to voice over IP. And so eventually we basically ran phones, you know, we did phones over data networks. And basically he was saying how that's going to happen, you know, with, in terms of crypto rails, and how eventually banks are probably just going to be, if they still exist, they'll be existing on crypto rails. And I think we're kind of now seeing that really play out, which is cool. And I think Terra is a big part of that.
What's a little bit different about the current network effects are that you can imagine back when like Mercedes-Benz or, you know, Henry Ford, or, you know, these people that sort of like pioneered automobiles. Imagine if they had modern highways before the actual invention of the car. Now, you could argue, well, there wouldn't be highways because, well, why would there be? Because, you know, the cars don't exist yet. Who's going to pay for them? What's interesting about the way the internet runs today is that the like the super highways are built, and now the ability to create sort of a like hyperspeed car that runs on that, sort of like, you know, obviously it's much easier to sell cars to people if the highways are already there, right? Just imagine, you know, the Wright brothers, you know, are built, you know, designing an airplane, but airports already existed, right? So the part of the reason why blockchain-based ecosystems, Terra in particular, is growing at such an extraordinary clip is that it's a blend of all of those kinds of enabling technologies, in addition to, well, people's need for money in the form of stable coins. And man, it's just like super powerful how that all sort of ties together. And it makes the network effect so, so much faster than early Visa, early MasterCard, even for that matter, early software that was developed on non-internet-based systems. Just the speed of deployment on cloud in particular, in software today, and just the number of like clients you can onboard onto a system is huge. But like, to me, Terra is like all of that stuff on just turbocharge, or blockchain in general, I suppose, but Terra even more so for all the catalysts we've already sort of described. Anyway, yeah, it's kind of a fascinating, but like, yeah, that's why the price growth curve is so ridiculous. It's why the, you know, the only thing I haven't seen yet actually is the wallet growth. I know Trevor came on yesterday with Tix, and he was mentioning how you can see this big spike in wallet growth as soon as they run one of their like ticket events, like at Decentral, I think was the last one. And yeah, well, all the things that we're really missing is the massive wallet growth. And then maybe, I think in my view, like a very easy way for businesses to on-ramp both UST and accept UST as a payment of some kind. It's almost like what we need is like a community grant that basically gets UST accepted on, like, I don't know, maybe Shopify, and maybe like Square or a few of these sort of like payment processors, native, meaning you don't have to go through the Visa or MasterCard network. So somehow integrating those. Now, again, does that help? Like, you have to look at it the other way too. How does it help Square? How does it help those industries?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think
you're trying to say something.
Can you hear me?
Hello? Yeah, you're good. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry. I think it just seems like it's a matter of time. It's not if, it's just when. And so that's exciting. The last thing I'll just I just want to see in case anyone missed it. So,
well, I would say that one thing is these things don't build themselves. So it's almost like, you know, people have to support the developers. They've got to give ideas out there. They've got to, you know, like businesses have to, you know, go to hackathons or whatever and like specifically request certain sort of things get built. So it's not just a matter, it's not necessarily just a matter of time. Like someone actually has to create them. And how we attract those someones and how we finance those operations is really important. I think that's part of the function of LFG actually, essentially, is to like promote development and provide grants and things and whatnot, yeah, where it doesn't have to be done by TFL necessarily anymore. It can be done by an outside foundation.
Yeah, when I say that, I just mean the entire, not just TFL or Terra, just the entire, although I think it'll be a big part of it, but just the entire space is bringing in all this talent and stuff like that. But I was just going to, the last thing I'll say is specifically around that, those tweet about Sailor Beware. So, and I don't know if you guys talked about this, but he was on a Spaces last night, and him and Kana from Jump Trading, and they basically announced without getting into details that, like, for example, the Bitcoin reserves will essentially grow as UST grows. And it'll be some type of automated smart contract type of thing. And they're going to have, you know, an announcement, you know, probably, I'm guessing within the next couple of weeks. And
well, it has to be, then, it has to be automated. It can't be manual because it won't be fast enough. Like in other words, you have to have, it has to be an automated system for sure to accomplish exactly what they're saying. You're right. So it's not like some body sitting there with a button and like fixing the peg with Bitcoin.
I'm just saying it wasn't like this might have been a one-time thing for the first billion, but it sounds like there'll be an automated mechanism in place. And then on top of that, this guy, Nick Platias, who's part of the Terra Money founding team, this is the first time I've come across him, but he goes into this thread about how it's not just going to be Bitcoin, but it's going to be other, you know, like potentially things like Ethereum to the reserves as well. And so I think it's just coming full circle in terms of like a lot of people weren't sure, is this where, you know, can algorithmic stable coins work? And now I think we're really starting to see like almost like the complete sort of vision in terms of how it's, you know, it has this algorithmic part to it, but now we're seeing it also kind of become, have some collateralization, some reserves in the background as well, you know, which is, it kind of went the other way. You know, a lot of other stable coins want to do, you know, like DAI, do collateralization first, whereas Terra, I think, was smart, went the other way, grew, and now it's kind of backstopping it. And so I don't know, for me, I'm so bullish. And I think that it's, you know, it's kind of really USD and Terra is just kind of cementing itself as probably the, you know, the top stable coin that we're going to see. Anyway, that's it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. Even normal currencies actually don't technically, like, it's not like, let's say, for example, the ruble. It's not like Russia says, okay, one ruble is worth one loaf of bread, right? Like, they don't, that's not how, like, prices are sort of discovered. There's a Forex market with the international currencies that basically people trade against various currencies. All the liquidity from all that trading and arbitrage creates a setting of the valuations of those currencies so that if I go to an exchange in Canada, I'll get one price. And very likely I'm going to get a very similar price if I go to Kenya and I go to an exchange, I'm going to get a similar price using the similar trading pair for the Canadian dollar, right? So all of that takes place because you have lots of people are being that difference, and it's a massive like trading enterprise that makes that happen. So even if you had an algorithmic coin that pegs to the dollar, when the system's large enough, there's almost no algorithm that can eventually encompass all of it. Traditional money markets would be required to arbitrage the remaining difference, which happens already, but the LFG BTC story is to do that a little bit more aggressively, so that while, again, the money markets get bootstrapped and you have external, more and more external money coming to do exactly this task, that $1 billion worth of BTC for now will be a way to sort of solve that problem without possibly waiting for external ARBs that may not have billions of dollars to play with. So yeah, that's the, I think, the rationale there, that algorithmically you can stabilize what's happening on chain and peg to the dollar, but off chain, how are we going to like get to that? And you need a separate sort of foundation or groups of arbitrage corporations or whatever. And the hope would be that eventually, when there's a larger and larger money markets, that the incentive will be there to serve this function with large quantities of money. So we'll see how that plays out. Let me get Greg on for a moment. And Greg, you there?
Yeah. Hi, Steffi. So sorry for beating the dead horse here, but about Bonded Luna, I'm still trying to like wrap my head around it. So I'm looking at Terra Station right now, and one Luna equals to 1.02 B Luna, right? So that's like a 2%, you're getting like 2% extra Luna, like you said.
Yes.
So my question is, so let's say like I take 100 Luna and I turn it to B Luna, and then if I switch B Luna, basically means I'm switching B Luna back to Luna, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so let's say I do this right now. I change Luna to B Luna, and then I burn B Luna back to Luna. Do I immediately, like, when I'm burning the B Luna for Luna, am I getting like the real Luna value?
Yes, exactly.
Every time?
Every time.
Holy shit! Okay, that's
no. That's what that's an arbitrage crazy. Is, right? An arbitrage. If you didn't actually gain anything by doing this, it wouldn't be called an arbitrage.
Yeah, right. Right. So I just didn't know.
Like, I'll give you an example. Another example of an ARB, so everyone understands what arbitrage means. And I think you're turn your speakers down a little bit because you're echoing a lot.
Sorry.
It's okay. So, like, for example, let's say you were to find that the price of Luna on Binance is $94 for some reason, and on Coinbase it was $91. An example, so there's a, let's say, a $3 difference between the two exchanges. You could technically buy it on Coinbase and sell it on Binance and then get $3 extra, right? So that's the arbitrage. An arbitrage is essentially a play on the market inefficiency between the mechanisms in the market that normally set prices. So, for example, Thorchain is not even going to have an oracle. So the entire Thorchain system, the market sets the actual rate without an oracle, which actually favors the idea of, let's say, for example, if Luna is cheaper on Thorchain, you're going to want to buy it on Thorchain and then send it over to Terra. Then you're going to want to swap to Bonded Luna, get the other 2%. So now you got like maybe a 1% cheaper over there, and you got another 2% over here. Then you burn it, and then you just go in circles. So you could actually find more ARB opportunities like that. And you're basically taking advantage of, in this case, the market inefficiency in pricing Bonded Luna versus Luna, and the fact that much of the time, more market participants prefer to go on the exchange from Bonded Luna to Luna for whatever reasons, and therefore there is a inequality there that can only be corrected by you getting the free, you know, the free or whatever B Luna. Also, because there's this 21-day or 24-day gap, the market feels like B-Luna should be priced slightly lower as a result of the fact that you have to wait to burn it. So if you instantaneously want to sell your B-Luna, you do so at a premium, because otherwise you would have had to have held it, and you don't know what the price of Luna is going to be in 21 to 24 days. So arbitrage works really well if it's an asset that you want, right? And you don't mind holding it for a month. You don't care. You just want more Luna. So it works really well, right? But if you are trying to sell your Luna in a month and, you know, you wanted it to have it available, it's not going to be available if it's in the middle of burning it, right? So that's the trade-off that people are making. Right, so there's always a reason why ARBs exist, and your ability to identify why they exist can also help you determine when they are likely to exist. When is the ARB going to be more impressive? It's going to be more impressive when lots of people want to swap B-Luna back to Luna suddenly, like when market volatility and prices drop and people want to sell bonded Luna quickly. That's when that might happen. It happens to a greater degree, at least, right? So that's what you're watching for there. And there are other arbitrages, by the way. There's across crypto, there's like, you know, probably hundreds of them, thousands of them that you could identify. Whether you can identify them consistently enough to make it help you very much, that's a different story, right? But you could also, not all of the arbitrages are necessarily all going to work. Like, for example, if you needed to sell 100,000 or you wanted to convert 100,000 Luna to bonded Luna, are you still going to get that 2% arbitrage? Maybe not, right? So depending on the depth of that pool and the depth of that arbitrage, it may not be possible to do large quantities of money like this. So when you guys are doing it with like 100 Luna or something like that, that may work. But you start getting to 100,000 Luna, you may have to do like, you know, hundreds of transactions over, like, you know, who knows how much time to make it work out for you, right? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay, I understand.
Because you're pegging the B-Luna back to the direction of Luna every time you do the Luna to B-Luna ARB, right? So you're sort of helping maintain the peg, so to speak.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. And one more thing, so also, like, I want to hear also, like, what you do. Like, do you hold more B-Luna than Luna? But also, like, if you're holding, so if I'm staking Luna, I'm earning 9%, right?
Yes, exactly. Well, okay. I can tell you exactly what I do. I have some chunk of my Luna in Stator auto compounding that just sits there. I have some one chunk in bonded form that I'm actually actively borrowing off of. And then I have like another substantial chunk that's in the middle of being burned right now that's coming back to Luna. And then I might ARB that again and again and again, unless I see, you know, and part of why I have like always some bonded Luna coming out of burns, so I'm doing it every few days, is because that way if an opportunity occurs where I believe I can borrow off of my Luna, then I can not only ARB it, I can tip to bonded Luna, but I can then borrow off that at a moment's notice without having to, not a moment's notice, it's every few days. But the point is, like, usually with markets, you know, you're going to have a pretty good buy if you wait, you know, anywhere between 3 to 21 days. So you're banking off the fact that you're sort of like dollar cost averaging your B Luna burns, and you're getting the arbitrages because that's free money. And then on top of that, you are able to potentially still borrow off of it, right? So that's the idea there.
Okay, I see. And also, just last question: so if you're holding B Luna, so it's like you're still staking, but like the staking rewards going to Anchor from Anchor, right? Like you still earning yield.
If I'm holding B Luna in my wallet just as a reserve to possibly manage LTV, yes, it's just going to produce UST there and go into Anchor.
Sorry, I mean if you're holding B Luna in your Terra wallet, you still get yield.
Yes, you claim it in Anchor in the bonded assets. You'll see a page that has claim at the top. And it's, you claim the UST there. That's where it's coming.
Okay. And it's exactly the same, 9% or whatever it is?
Yes, it is. Okay. Yeah. What I would strongly recommend everyone do is learn what every single button in the Anchor Protocol page does. Like, you should literally like research every single one of them, read the white paper, everything, because you want to know what, like, the mechanics of every single button in Anchor, I kid you not, is some form of useful way to utilize your capital.
Where does that UST come from? Is that from network fees, or is that
No, it's the same yield as Luna gets. It's okay. Just it's in the bonded version. What happens in the background is normally you get UST and a variety of other stable coins plus Luna, right? If you just straight stake it. So the difference between that is you're not straight staking it here. What you're doing is in the background, the system is selling all the other stuff into UST, right? And that's what you're getting.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's because Anchor needs UST specifically to take the bonded assets, whether it's bonded ETH, bonded Luna, or whatever, and it needs to port that UST into the earn reserve, right? Like, so it's part of its revenue. It does all of that automatically at a coin level, so that Anchor doesn't have to do that separately at a protocol level, right? So it's pretty interesting. So bonded Luna itself is an interesting tool, because if all you want to do with your Luna is earn UST, you can convert it to bonded, dump it in your wallet, and all your yield will go into UST instead of to different stable coins / Luna, right? Like, let's say you wanted to reduce your future exposure. Let's say I want to retire off my Luna and I only want the UST because I'm going to spend it for my like rent or something, right? Then it makes sense for the, you don't want to have the price volatility at any given moment of Luna, maybe. You're just interested in converting it all to UST to use it, right? So you can use that as a tool, in a sense, the bonded Luna. So yeah, that's the idea.
Sefi, like how far do you think we are from like Luna being, sorry, not Luna, UST being used as like a currency for like buying things?
Well, you can buy things now. Like, you can go to Travala.com for travel agency. You can go to places like Terra Cards. There's another one where you can get gift cards, particularly if you're in, I think, Europe or the US. There's a lot of common gift cards, like, I don't know, Starbucks and Walmart and God knows what else. A lot of gift cards. And you can get those and just convert your UST. Amazon gift cards, for example, if you like Amazon. So there's plenty of ways to already to be able to use your UST. And then now with all these debit cards coming out, like Alice and others, your UST that you've earned in the ecosystem can be spent using the debit card, which then converts it to fiat for the, the businesses that you're transacting or you're interacting with, right? So in the example of like an Alice, you would basically have your UST earning Anchor yield until the point where you like swipe it to go get gas or something like that, right? So definitely the ability to spend it or off-ramp it is being facilitated by the debit card network of Visa and MasterCard. But later, ideally, you'd want businesses that accept it directly so that businesses save money on credit card transaction fees, which are miserable basically for businesses. So there's a strong business use case for switching to UST. Like, it's really strong. Businesses largely have the problem of their Basel infrastructure for accepting, their baseline infrastructure for accepting payments has been built out to really like mainly accept the most common payments, which are things like, Visa, MasterCard, and more recently, like things like Apple Pay, Google Pay are sort of like taking a role in that. But eventually, if like, say, for example, Apple Pay were to be able to do UST and be able to do so without going through the credit card network and eliminating all those fees, it would be extremely beneficial to the businesses to eliminate those 1-2% or more transaction fees that businesses have to pay in order to accept credit cards.
Okay. everything you just said sounds absolutely amazing, but don't you like want like,
or like, actually to answer your question, yeah, it's more like, yeah, wait 5 to 10 years.
Sure.
Like
sure.
The reality is it's not going to be instantaneous.
There is, there's sure, Kado sure. Pay, or is it, yeah, it's called Kado Pay, KADO. And it's kind of like ordering something off Amazon. You can order stuff right out of your Terra Station wallet with UST.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, because I guess everybody can see like the world is heading towards like a decentralized stablecoin like being used as a payment system. But don't you think like governments around the world are gonna try to like do something about this? Isn't this taking basically power away from the government?
No, they're not gonna be able to do anything about anything.
Can't they?
Governments have been. Like if you look at the last 5,000 years of governments, there's never been a situation, not once in the history of the human race, where they did not conform to whatever technological change actually happened. Right. Like not once. So there's not like a good example of at all, like where a technology was like, well, I take that back. Let me scale that back. Okay. Landmines. Okay. So there's a Geneva Convention against landmines. It's where you can't blow each other up with landmines. But outside of that, there aren't too many, you know, okay, don't throw nuclear weapons at each other and things. There's a few rules, but like, no, but any kind of a consumer enabling technology, right? The consumer is the government eventually, right? Like these countries and these quote unquote, the governments, that's you. You're the government. You're the one electing these people. You're the one putting them into power in your various countries. And as time goes on, when the people want a specific technology, they will get it. And if it's affordable, they will use it. And if businesses in particular benefit, they will use it, right? So it may come in the form of Terra money. It may come in the form of other crypto. It might come in the form of Bitcoin. It might be that there's like a gajillion different transfer options, and each wallet is going to be able to handle like dozens of different possible payment rails. But whatever helps the consumer ultimately becomes the will of the people and then becomes the government itself. So I wouldn't worry about it at all.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
Yeah. It's like worrying about that is like worrying about like what they're going to do about smartphones. Like nothing. They're just going to start using them. Right. Like, like, yeah, you can commit, I don't know, crimes on smartphones, but that doesn't mean that people, the vast majority of people don't benefit from them.
Right? I listened to a talk with some executives from Visa and MasterCard recently, and they're just really talking about how they're going to incorporate it. It's not like they're afraid of it or, you know, trying to shut it down. They're actually just talking about how exactly they're going to roll out integration with digital assets and CBDCs and all that. I mean, and they also mentioned that they thought that cash won't go away. So a lot of people think that we're just going to completely do away with cash altogether, but it doesn't seem like that's going to happen anytime soon if it does happen. So I think there's room for all of it, actually. I don't think it's going to go 100% any which way.
Yeah, I mean, the Visa and MasterCard networks, I mean, took how many decades to sort of establish, right? What you guys are seeing now is going to play out over decades too. It's not going to be an instant thing. So you're not getting like, you know, $1 million Luna next week, okay? Like, no need to be delusional. It's going to take time. But at the same time, like, if useful protocols can be built that make use of both Luna and UST, we bring that a reality closer, much faster. If we bring like real world application, like Tix is doing for tickets, for example, we bring that closer to reality. So builders and businesses have to decide to operate on these platforms. They have to decide to take the extra step to make a person have to learn something new to make it work. And this was true in credit card times too. I don't know if you guys remember this, but I don't know. Most of us remember that. Well, if we were old enough, we remember when you had that little carbon paper and you have to rub the credit card in it. And then they would get remittances. The business would take forever to get their so-called credit card payments, have to mail them in and whatnot. It was just like, remember, this is before computers. So credit cards were there credit card networks before even like modern, you know, computing and where the internet is now, right? So these networks took a long time to form. They're just happening way faster now than they did back in the day. So you'd be surprised how quickly some of these things can take form, you know, with the right people building on them. Let me get John for a moment. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Seffy, thanks for hosting this space. I wanted to go back to conversation a few minutes ago about these arbitrage opportunities and ask like kind of two specific questions. One, like what sort of market conditions give rise to these arbitrage opportunities? Like, is it a run-up in price that's more likely causing them, or is it the fact that some of these liquidity deep pools are actually fairly thin?
It's not due to thinness, because if you look at both TerraSwap and Astroport, they've had plenty of liquidity. It's just the fact that like there are a significant number of people that want to suddenly want to move B Luna to Luna in the other direction. Yeah. I don't know why there are that many people that do that, but they're certainly out there. And some of them, you know, John, one of the reasons might be, let's say you're in Bonded Luna mainly, and you don't really care that you have that premium you have to pay, because you've already, when you went from Luna to Bonded Luna in the first place, you already gained all the benefit, right? So by going the other direction, if you lose 2%, maybe you don't care at that point. And maybe you just simply want the ability to just get the yield immediately, build a borrow off it immediately, and sell it whenever you feel like it for a profit, and not worry about that 2%. So there may be people that are just impatient, and that's why they tend to sell B Luna for a slight loss in that situation.
Yeah, that makes sense. My second question was, say we were to like fast forward a year or so and play the game where Luna is in the like the 10x range, say at around $1,000. Like, do you see the price like impacting how often you can do some of these arbs, or do you think they're like fairly independent of what the price of Luna actually is?
The Luna Bonded Luna pool is separate. It doesn't route through UST. So technically speaking, it will persist so long as it's popular to borrow using Bonded Luna, right? If that were to diminish for some reason, for whatever reasons, then the sort of style of opportunity would disappear. So in other words, with ARBs, you don't really want to necessarily like plan your future life around the assumption that ARBs will remain, you know, forever for whatever reasons, right? So I think you're always sort of looking for new opportunities, and this happens to be one of the interesting ones lately. But I don't necessarily plan around the idea that it's going to persist. To me, I look at it like kind of a gift, and assume that it's going to be gone one day. So
have you tried the Luna X ARB? I think like I set up ArbiBot a couple of days ago, and that one seems to be triggering more often for me than the Luna B Luna ARB. I know it doesn't really play into your
ally. You certainly can. You just can't borrow off your Luna X while you're holding it right now, at least not on Anchor. So that's something to be aware of.
But if you're only trying to play the ARB, it's still feasible.
Yeah, it's feasible, but just be aware that Luna X's price does not peg 1-to-1 with Luna 2, right?
Yeah.
So Luna X is supposed to be worth more than Luna, even at baseline. So if you're getting an ARB, you have to calculate that difference plus the difference on the AMM. So I don't know if ArbiBot does a good job of that or not. I know Danku had them sort of reprogram ArbiBot to like give the proper percentage difference or whatever, but it is, the mechanics are a little bit different.
I only had enough Luna to do the ARB once, and it seemed to work, and now I'm waiting 21 days for another chance.
Yeah,
whichever one
you get the percentage difference, go for it. Yeah, no big deal.
Yep. Thanks, Seffy. that was all cool. I had at the moment.
Cool. Let me get one last person here. I've got to go. So we'll see if any other further. Let's get Cake on. Caker.
Two. Regarding the tax implication of going from Luna to B-Luna, how is that any different than like depositing into an LP pool? Because like, couldn't that be viewed as you're trading your liquidity for these tokens, you know, versus?
Yeah, the simple answer is officially, every single time you convert to something, it would be construed as a taxable event.
So yeah, okay, so including like an LP pool. And obviously they haven't been like...
Yeah, pretty much anything.
And I mean, they haven't been pressing people on that, right? So like, I guess that argument can still be made for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to file your Luna to be Luna as some kind of a like-kind exchange and the extra ARB you made as being like...
That'd be just a cap.
Yield, or something as income, right? Or something. I don't know. You could come up with some scheme, I suppose. Yeah, there's no right answer to any of this. Right. Like, there's the answer that's most defensible, which would be just taxing every single event.
Right. Okay. All right, cool. That was it.
But any other financial engineering essentially requires some combination of imagination and some ability to convince whoever you have to convince if the time came to explain yourself.
All right, thanks. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Actually, I think Velos was waiting a long time, so let me get him on, and then we'll break after that. Velos, go ahead. What's up?
Quick question for you. Do you think we have way too many types of Luna? To be honest, like, I get what bonded Luna is. I even understand what N Luna is and X Luna, but then Prism pops in and they got refracting and everything else that they have. Like, it's just getting a little ridiculous. And I feel at some point we're just going to have additional Luna as well. I'm just trying to understand like what the overall point of getting this many type of Luna is, you know. Arbing it is cool, but it just seems
silly. so far there's been a point to every single one of them. Like, they just offer sort of different mechanisms of how they either accrue value, like say for example Luna X, or for example how the functionality of bonded Luna and emitting UST, or it's because Luna has yield, it creates these situations where you can do different things with the yield. So I think you wouldn't have this many primitives if, for example, let's say Atom, it only emits Atom. It doesn't emit like stable coins plus Atom. So the number of possible primitives you can create are less, right? So yeah, you're right. Like you may not need all of these, right? Like, and you don't have to use all of them. All you have to say to ask yourself is, wait, of these different ones, how would I use this to my advantage as an investor or trader or whatever it is you're trying to do? And all the rest of them you just ignore. Like, nobody, you know, you don't need to care about those. Right? Like, I don't use all of them. I just use, like, I have certain exposures to certain ones if I see a good deal. So for example, when P Luna was at $12, I was like, oh, that's a pretty good deal. I'll get a little bit of that, right? So it offers different price exposures, different yield exposures, different ways to deliver that yield. Then you have auto compounding, right? You have all these neat little tools, but there are importances to these. Like, for example, auto compounding, right? To the question, gentleman earlier who's asking about taxes, like, if you're on Stator, you could leave that running for 5 years or have Luna X and you don't have to pay taxes on that, like, until the point you sell it. You don't have to claim anything. You don't have to do the Luna bonded Luna thing. You don't have to do any of those things if you don't want to. You can just have the most tax efficient, that just be park it on Stator, have it auto compound and call it a day, right? Or I think, and I don't know, ST Luna is out there too with Loop. I don't know if they auto compound your airdrops or not. I'm not 100% sure. Maybe someone can answer that question. But you don't auto compound airdrops in Stator, for example. I wish that option was there too. But natively, it does not do that. So anyway, but the idea is that certain features you're going to want and make use of and other people won't. A lot of people, like you said, they're not going to use them because they don't even know what they do. So they're like, whatever. So you do have to do some research to figure out what each of these things do if you want to use them.
Fair enough. That makes sense.
That is the question. Yeah, I mean, and like, yeah, which ones do you, or like, let me ask you this, which ones do you use?
I can monitor my collateral, so I don't use Nexus, so I don't use nLuna. Instead of, using Terra Station to stake, I don't want to use that, so I use Stater. And those are I pretty much just use bLuna and xLuna at currently. Everything else just kind of seems whatever to me, to be honest. You're 100% right. I see where, you know, there are other benefits as well. I just think from a newbie perspective, it can seem a bit overwhelming because most other assets, right, don't have, like you use the derivative, don't have as many. And it's just like, wait a minute. I just want some Luna. Like, what the hell is all this other stuff? Like, is it the same? How does it work?
And when we have it, just creates a mix of,
go ahead, brother.
Like, it's a mix of newbies. And it's a mix of like hardcore, like, you know, Terra degens who want to like eke out every possible, you know, place they can make a buck or whatever. It all, like, and part of the learning process too, it is interesting to see what's possible with DeFi, right? It's not just a matter of like, you know, would I use this? It's a question. The question I ask is, how would other people use these things, even if I don't? Because if other people are going to use them, that means there are going to be all sorts of different people that are going to show up on Terra and want to use these different things. And that's going to drive up the like price of Luna eventually, right? So to me, if I'm going to be investing in Luna, I want to know that all of those things do have a purpose and people want to use them, right? So it's value accrual to me either way. So anyway.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so that's kind of that's the way I look at them. Yeah, learn about them, use the ones you want, and skip the rest. And I wouldn't worry too much about the newbies. Most people aren't going to figure all these things out anyway. They're going to learn one or two things and call it a day. It's mostly the nerds in these spaces that want to know all this shit, right? Like, realistically. So, anyway. That's right, but yeah, good catching up with everybody. We'll do this again sometime. We'll catch you later, guys.
Take it easy, man. Have a good one, guys.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was a CeFi space. Luna, what is going on with this thing? Recorded on Wednesday, March 2nd, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by WeFund. WeFund is a community crowdfunding cross-chain incubator on Terra, and it's the first launchpad that implements a milestone funding release system to protect investors. All money raised for projects is deposited in Anchor Protocol, and it's refundable, and all decisions are based on community voting power. WeFund is community-focused and designed to be a user-friendly experience for both project creators and investors. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the Telegram for more information. Links are in the show notes and check them out online at WeFund.app. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Digging in the dirt, trying to find the treasure. Learning how to mix this business with pleasure. I'm kicking a lecture, spitting conjecture. High as a bird while I'm flipping the gesture. Living like a jester, infesting these extras. Dissecting a mess, the eagle looking headstrong. Infinitesimal, the spitting is next world. And if you don't agree, well then I'm afraid you're dead wrong. So leave the mess hall and clean your plates up. I can't believe the rest of y'all feed on makeup. Bereavement breakup to rearrange your wake up. Big ol' bloody mess like a scene from Braveheart. Driving race cars. cars that beat the fate. It's hard to meet your maker when the features ain't marked. Trying to slide underneath the paywall. I'm afraid this motherfucker's gone AWOL.
You had best unfuck yourself or I will unscrew your head and kick down your neck!
Sir, yes sir!
Private Joker, what did you do on my beloved gold?
Sir, to kill sir!
No, you're a killer!
Sir, yes sir!
Let me see your war face!
Sir!
You got a war face?
Living on the earth, trying to mine some headspace. Give a little gift like I'm lifted dead weights. The risk of resting kicks the nest egg. Square in the nuts, y'all feel intestate. The breeze swept in, no need of resting. The least depressing, so sweet but messy. I need the best day to keep professing and hope my body doesn't leave behind a red stain. Pouring out a little liquor for the dead states while the rest wait and bleed domestic. No means to gestate, breeds the best cake. Beauty on the back of the queen she just date. So take a little dive down a K-hole while I flip the B-roll right into A-roll and make the payroll go a little further. Replace the merger with the tainted version.
I'm a snowball!
Snowball, what are you doing, sir?
I'm a snowball, you're fired! Private Joker is promoted to squad leader!
The numbers. I will teach you. Now get up. Get on your feet.
Terror Spaces.